And welcome to all. This is Lina Mirmont. I'm with my show, Lina Live. And with even greater inspiration, I like to welcome our just extraordinarily interesting guest who found his time and desire to come for the second time to our show. And we're talking about, of course, Bob Berg. Welcome, Bob.
Well, thank you. It's so great to speak with you again.
Well, I am quite sincerely inspired. And just to make a very brief introduction, which will merge into our great detailed discussion about your tremendous accomplishments, about, of course, your new book with more than just mentioning a previous book. And with this preliminary information, I just wanted to give you a brief, but hopefully meaningful enough introduction. And the way great audience, readers, admirers of yours see you as a truly an extraordinarily person with unlimited horizon, which I feel profoundly intertwined with life and business, where business truly becomes as a part of life. With this, I like to make a bit of a prelude about your previous book, which found itself tremendous amount of success, a lot of space on the shelves. You sold, if I'm correct, more than 250,000 copies of it. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the title of the book, of course, Go Giver. In fact, it's a very energetic title, which already asks someone to ask himself or herself a question, go and give. And that, I believe, creates tremendously powerful and logical bridge to your very new book, which is called Adversaries into Allies. And that's about people's skill, people's abilities to create very solid and reliable business relationships, which are literally can be done without manipulation or cursing. And that is something which we will be talking about, including major five principles and some other points in the book. I, however, have to confess to you that I was not too fair to you at the last program because I really did not talk enough about your accomplishments. And I like to take an opportunity and to do so now. And since obviously your accomplishments are global and take so much more time than just one program, I will make some of them particularly very clear, very pronounced, and very memorable, and something which I personally was taken with. I don't believe you have difficulties or differences speaking in front of one person or 60,000 people. Am I right, or there is a difference?
Well, it's a different energy, I think, but yeah, let's put it this way. I get just as nervous speaking in front of 50 people as I do 15,000 people because I, you know, feel a responsibility to do my best and provide the value that I've been brought in to provide whenever I speak. So yeah, there is a different energy, but I enjoy both. You know, I enjoy the energy of a massive audience, you know, in a stadium and I or in an arena, and I also enjoy when it's, you know, 50 people, when I can have a cup of coffee up front while I'm talking, and that it becomes more interactive and personal and so forth. So then, you know, I like both.
Coffee with donut, I have to mention, because that's a little detail I learned about your preferences.
What's that?
I'm talking about coffee with
donuts. Yeah, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, to be specific.
Dunkin'
That's
Donuts.
My...
Yes. it's interesting that you mentioned being nervous, considering that you share arena with truly political leaders, including the former president of the United States, including some tremendously important people in Olympic sport. And what I learned also, which particularly moved myself, is a tremendous diversification. It's either conference for the entrepreneurs, it is can be a very high caliber CEO. Virtually, there is no borders. And that's why I felt that you truly have unlimited horizon. It's more than pleasure. I like to make a little introduction of my own to the significance and the role of your books, and particularly, of course, the last book, which we're going to make a subject of this program. I like to say that there is a tremendous need and almost crying necessity for the book which you wrote. And that is why, historically, for the last perhaps 10, 15 years, our world went through the frequencies of major changes. I believe that was one of the most incredible moments in the history of humankind, when for the short period of time, we had so many changes took place. And there is no really much of a surprise why people are so greatly influenced by those changes, why they are so stressful, why they are disoriented, why they are in fear of doubts. And I believe that because of this very challenging ground, your book is particularly very shiny and particularly incredibly relevant, with answers, with guidance, and with such a scrupulous and tremendously deep understanding about human nature and business. Perhaps I stretched the connections, and I didn't mean to glamorize some complexities or darkness, but it is a reality. And with the everyday life and everyday challenges, we cannot say business as usual. If anything, it is not as usual. And you're trying to make it very palatable. You are bringing back this human power with a brain, integrity, people's skill. I think you call it unlimited skills, or you will correct me to be in a more...
Yeah, ultimate proper. Influence, yeah.
Unlimited influence, thank you. And you put this very complicated pie as a human source for the solution, for the progress. And last thing I wanted to say before we will be eagerly listening to your voice, I enjoyed tremendously preparation for this program, because I didn't feel I was preparing. When I just started to touch and to look into your book, I felt that it was instant merging with literally pleasure of reading something which is so transparent, so humanly written, and so captivating, because there are answers, because there are some incredibly close connection with every minute, or with some major business issues. So I'm shifting gears with my platforms to yours, and I just simply will give you the choice, whatever you like to start to discuss, either it's a five principles. I certainly like to catch some time and to go into different moments, different pages of the book. But I think five principles are fundamental content of your book, and perhaps it's a good place to start. So
sure.
Let's start from principle number one.
Sure. Well, principle number one is simply to control your own emotions. We begin the book by asking by citing a question and an answer from the sages of old, and the question goes, "Who is a mighty person? Who is a mighty person?" And the answer is that person who can control their own emotions and make of an enemy or of a potential enemy a friend. And it's key that we start here because it all begins with whether we're going to be in control of our emotions or whether our emotions are going to be in control of us. As human beings, we are emotional creatures. Now, we are also logical, but we're very emotional, and most of our decisions are actually made emotionally, and then we back up those decisions with logic or justification or rationalization. We rationalize, and if you break up the word rationalize, it simply means we tell ourselves rational lies in order to justify the emotional decision that we wanted to make. So the key is not to become an unemotional person. Emotions are part of what makes life fun. But as one of my friends and mentors, Don DiScumaci, says, by all means, take your emotions along for the ride, but make sure you are in the driver's seat. And this is so important when dealing with a potentially difficult person or just a person who, just because of the situation itself, might be somewhat adversarial. And when you are in control of your own emotions, what happens is you're in a position where you can live in the solution. When you, as Zig Ziglar would say, react instead of respond. When you react, you're allowing someone else to be in control of you. When you respond, you're in control of yourself. So this is what's so key, and that's why it's so important. If someone, you know, nobody, and we know that nobody can make you feel badly, nobody can make you mad, nobody can make you sad, but they can sure do things that push your buttons, as we say, and because of our own feelings about ourselves and our own background, those things might cause us, you know, to have those negative feelings.
Yes, so absolutely. Just jumping in for a moment, in fact, that thought, which is, I found extraordinarily important, it really relates to one of the other principles where I think you're talking about some clashes, different backgrounds, and some other issues which are so real because people certainly have different roots and different habits and different culture for that reason. So I my apology that I jumped in. But I wanted to stress particularly this point, since you touched on this, that you very clearly, very diligently described that it is indeed possible to control your emotions if you are aware of certain points.
And that's the key. Awareness is key. If we're not aware, then what happens is we just react to things. But when you begin to understand that a major part of success is your ability to control your emotions, then you can start planning for this to happen and act out of conscious awareness when something happens that would usually trigger off your being upset or angry. Now, you made a great point that when you brought up the principle about belief systems, and in principle number two of ultimate influence is understand the clash of belief systems. What is a belief? Well, a belief is simply, it's our subjective truth. It's the truth as we understand the truth to be, which, as you know, isn't necessarily the truth, which is objective, which just is. Our belief system is, you could say it's sort of the lens through which we view the world. It's our paradigm or model of the world. And our beliefs are handed to us. We have nothing to do with creating them. They're a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, movies, popular culture and entertainment, cultural mores, everything we touch, taste, hear, see, and smell, everything that goes into our mind from the time we're born forms our belief system. And much of that belief system is actually formed when we are very, very young. And so what happens is we basically grow up with an operating system, if you will, like a computer. We grow up with an operating system, our belief system, and we don't even know that we are run by this belief system. And so while we think we're being logical and thinking things through, no, most of it is just based on our beliefs that have been handed to us, which we had nothing to do with, we were not critical about them. We didn't question them. We didn't say, well, why is this true or why isn't that true? Most of them we just accepted. We're too young to do otherwise. The problem is most people even today don't realize that they are run by an operating system, which is their belief system. And now here are the additional points which make this really bring this home, that while we are unconsciously run by our belief system, so is the other person. This other person with whom we might have a difficult situation, conversation, transaction, what have you, they are also run by an operating system, by their belief system that they are not aware of. Now, to add on to that, as human beings, we tend to believe that everybody else sees the world as we see it. This is why you've heard people say, oh, everybody feels that way, or nobody thinks like that, or I would never say that to someone, and they feel bad because someone said something new that you would never say to someone else. Well, it's because there's two different belief systems in operation. And so when we are about to have a difficult or challenging interpersonal situation or about to meet up with someone who might be difficult, what we've got to understand is we don't necessarily have to understand their belief system. We probably don't even understand our own belief system, never mind someone else's. What we do need to understand is that that person's belief system is most likely very, very different from ours. And it's only when we understand that, that now we're in the context of being able to work within a solution.
A very profound concept, and there is no room for hypocrisy. And I like to make very well known, I would say, banal point that it is well known that since childhood and going through teens time, people have this well-adapted learned behavior. And they come to their workplace or school place with a well-rehearsed smile. But Chanel bag will not help. Lack of knowledge will not help. And I found that your book, Go Giver, also, in fact, proves the points which you just made, creates a incredibly powerful, unlimited opportunity for a human being to realize and to stretch his or her abilities to deal with the situation, to use curiosity, to use some basic skills of reasoning. And that I like to make a stop here and come back to what you just said in terms of understanding of clash of belief system, leading to acknowledgement of ego. Because unfortunately, ego is something we have to face. And if person has enough of, let's say, philosophical background or just general education, will use this ego as a power engine, but not as an enemy. And that I'm piling into another question, taking advantage of your brilliance and knowledge of your own book, that leads to another point of having this opportunity to communicate with tact and empathy. Those five principles, even though well-defined, well-articulated, but they are interconnected. So let me unwind this pile of thoughts and questions. And if we can talk about control, opposed controlling, and if we can take piece of your wisdom and part of the books which relates and connects from a clash of belief system to ego acknowledgement.
Yeah, well, you know, as you alluded to, the ego is simply, it's the I. It's that part of ourself that understands that we are a unique individual, separate from others. And this sounds almost a little politically incorrect to say that we're separate from others because we're supposed to, you know, say, well, we're all part of the whole and so forth. And you know, hey, there are times we are parts of others. We're part of a family, part of a community, part of a city, part of a state, what have you. But and then, you know, we hear about quantum physics in which we're all in that, you know, one general plane of connected consciousness. And, you know, personally, I believe all of that. I mean, that's fine. None of that contradicts the fact that as, you know, earthly beings, we also are individuals and we are separate from others. We each have our own sense of happiness, our own values, you know, what we value that would lead to our happiness. We have, you know, at least theoretically, the right to pursue happiness as an individual as we see fit, providing it doesn't, you know, we don't infringe upon someone else's rights to do the same. But that's ego, and it's the I. And by the way, there's much of the ego, as you were talking about, that when it's harnessed, when we're in control of this ego, we can accomplish great things that add lots of value to the world. The only time when it's not productive and even counterproductive is when the ego controls us. And that's when, you know, that's when advocates turn into dictators. You know, the ego gets to them. Or that's when the person who's realized some success and then starts believing their own press.
Yes, and unfortunately, history knows a lot of those examples. Too many.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why it's important for us to control our own ego. Now, the reason I say acknowledge the other person's ego, it's not that you acknowledge it to them by telling them you know they have an ego. They're not interested in that. What I mean is the other person is probably acting, especially if they're being difficult, there's a good chance that they are acting out of their ego controlling them, and you've simply got to acknowledge that to yourself. You've got to acknowledge that in most interpersonal transactions, the other person's ego will come into play. But remember, they're not aware of it. They are not conscious of it. So you've got to understand it, and you've got to be conscious of it, that they are probably acting out of ego and the emotion that comes with it. And again, as long as we understand that, now we're in a position to work within that frame.
I will continue with my another thought, but now I wanted to make sure that our listeners are totally aware that we have privilege to speak to Bob Berg, a brilliant thinker, writer, one of the leader in a human world with a tremendously full business attached.
That's very kind of you. Wisdom, thank you.
Who is the author of Go Giver, also ultimate influence was expressed in his adversaries into Eli's book, which we're discussing now. He is the author whose books were translated in 21 languages. Bob, is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been very fortunate. We've enjoyed the journey.
That is tremendous. And that leads to one of the question, which indeed, again, perhaps a little bit echoing with my historic observation and the connection with your book. It's a tremendous message from you as an American to other parts of the world. And it is particularly so significant now because other parts of the world have their own difficulties. So they have their own ego character when you are talking about our local ego character. And I must say that when I was reading your book, it was just almost as a reminder that no matter how much you're trying to avoid the issue, avoid the truth, it's just not worth of the energy or time. You totally exclude manipulation, not only in outside business, but you're actually trying and successfully succeeding in taking out manipulation with a person inside of himself or inside of herself. And I like to make a little connection with some old but very good school of thinking that before you come to the meeting, you really need to know about the person you will be talking to, about his or her hobbies, about his or her interest and weakness. And the reason I'm bringing this up because there are some young people who eagerly like to learn from you, and I'm sure they do. So let me ask you about this scenario where, for example, you're meeting a person for the very first time, and this person knows about you, but you don't really know much about that person. You have common interests, you have common goal, but you don't know much about this person. What would be your positions? What would be your questions? And just as simple, what would be your statements to open up palatable and comfortable conversation, which you're so master about?
Well, thank you. Well, the first thing I would do is simply focus on them, and that's the key. Most people enjoy talking about themselves, and if you ask them the right questions, they'll talk about themselves, and they'll give you information that will really help you to add value to their lives. You know, asking someone a question such as, you know, let's say you know what line of work they're in, and you say, how did you get started in the so-and-so business? You know, how did you get started as an accountant? Or how did you first get started in real estate? Or how did you get started as a financial advisor? That's a question people love to answer because it really gives them an opportunity to sort of be the star of the show. I mean, most people are not asked that question. Most people are not asked by others to tell their story. So when you ask a person that question, you're very genuinely and authentically allowing them to really talk about themselves, which they enjoy, and you get to learn a lot about them. So that's just one question. Another very effective question to ask is, you know, after you hear the answer, is to ask something like, what do you enjoy most about what you do? Now, again, this is just a feel-good type of question because by the very nature, you're asking, what do you enjoy most about what you do? So this person, aside from answering that question, they feel good about themselves by the nature of the question, and as a result, they associate those good feelings with you. Now, asking a person about their family is always, you know, a neat thing because people generally love talking about their family, their talented spouse or their student athletic children. You know, asking someone about their recreation. If the person's a tennis player or a skier, people generally love talking about their recreational activities. They're usually passionate about those activities. And then another great question is to find out what I call their message or what they see as being bigger than them. In other words, are they involved in a charity? Are they involved in some kind of cause? Are they involved in some sort of, you know what I'm saying? And when you ask about that, and remember, they are totally devoted to that, they're going to enjoy the conversation.
Yes, that interaction. And I need to say it is particularly so valuable because we are separated by the internet. As everyone knows, my shows has a slogan. It's a union of opposites. Internet is a tremendous source of information. We don't need to even to talk about this. But it is a curtain. I call it like a hidden theater. You're imagining what's going on behind this curtain, but you really don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's another tremendously valuable message and environment and atmosphere which you're creating and adversaries into allies. I wanted to make sure that our listeners will, again, be very aware. I'm speaking with a great Bob Berg, and he has his website. By the way, your website is so informative. It's not hectic. It's diligently done. You can study what's going on with you in the world with some thoughts, ideas, of course, your very dynamic accomplishments. And the website is www.berg.com. Bob, normally I have tremendous difficulties to pronounce websites. But you said
and you know what the most difficult thing is of all? That it's,
yes.
It's B-U-R-G. And the most difficult thing is for people to spell it, because if they don't know better, they'll spell it B-E-R-G, because I think that's usually the way Berg is spelled. But my grandfather's last name was actually shortened when he at immigration, so it's Berg, B-U-R-G .com.
I see. Well, thank you for making that indeed a very critical point. But, of course, everyone knows Bob Berg. And how to spell it, we all enjoy. So coming back to my point, which I wanted to make regarding young people, I wanted to make a point before I will ask actually directly about you following your wonderful example of the conversation. But before that, I wanted to thank you for being so patient, so understanding, regardless the age or regardless the elite or just diligence of a given individual. This book is addressed to everyone who wants to be part of the noble process. And that process doesn't need to be complicated. This process just has to be very genuine, honest, and has its own goal. And I wanted to thank you particularly for that very helping element and like a leitmotif, because there is tremendous problems with education today. People are jumping into the college if they have money to do so, but they're not really prepared for life. They come from broken homes. They come from tremendous gaps in the education. So people like yourself have that burden to fill those holes and to create this business nourishment for these young people. And on the side, I wanted to tell you that even my own son learned something from you. I wanted to thank you because he had some technical issue. And very timely you explained this. And I just wanted to thank you and admire you for the fact that you do have time for everyone. I don't know how to do this. But it is such a sign of high, uncompromising professionalism. Now we like to know who is Bob Berg, because I had a little bit of a goosebumps after I was reading your thanks and gratitude towards your parents. In the very, very beginning of the book, you acknowledged their role in your life. Talk about that, please.
Well, I was very fortunate because, and they've been married now, I guess, 56 years, almost 57, and just have a wonderful, wonderful marriage. So, You know, one thing I did get to have was the security of knowing my folks were going to be together and that they loved each other and they liked each other and they loved their children. So that was very, very fortunate that I was given them as parents. And, I've been able to, you know, to learn from them. And it's been a terrific thing.
Well, you certainly have this juice of life, which probably I will be very, very presumptuous and would say you cannot appreciate enough because it's so good in such complicated society, because your background is quite rare considering challenges and considering problems which today so-called normal families have. So I am certainly having some understanding and reason for such enlightenment, which always is an accompaniment to your writing, to your thoughts, and even some very profound and some difficult personal characteristics. I like to go to certain points which I think very important in the book, even though perhaps they are not they are not pointed by some of your feedbacks, which by the way, quite extraordinary. You getting feedback and admiration from the top people in the industry, and that is put on the back of your book. And since I'm talking about the book, again, just like a go-giver, this book has its extremely convenient format. You feel that you're holding almost like a novel or a book of poetry. The style of it suggests that you can read before going to bed, or you can read it in a sleep and wake up in the morning smart as a god. It has a tremendous quality which is appealing to human perception. I like to go into certain chapters and have your input and comments on this. For example, don't shame or embarrass. What would you comment on that?
Well, there are different ways that we can sort of put another person down, even by mistake, without thinking about it. Somebody says something in a conversation where it's a group conversation and someone says something that may not be factually correct. There's a natural human tendency for many of us, including me, to correct that person. Say, oh, no, it was actually, 28, not 27. And then you think about that, is there really a reason to do that? Now, there may be. Sometimes there is a legitimate reason, because if the people don't know, then it could hurt. But I'm talking about those incidents where it really doesn't make a difference. So what you might do afterwards is when you have the person by themselves, you may very tactfully tell them, say something like, I'm not sure, but I believe that the correct answer was 28, or something like that. In other words, whenever possible, it's best not to correct or put someone down in front of others. Now, that was a very generic vanilla example. It can be, something much more than that. But another way of shaming or embarrassing someone is to insult them. I tell the story in the book about someone I used to work with who would, basically he would insult someone, and then when the person just looked a little offended, this coworker of mine would say, "Hey, I was only kidding." And then the other person would kind of go, "Oh yeah, laugh as though, but they didn't think it was funny, and they didn't like this particular person." And I remember at one point I took him aside and I said, "Hey, if you have to explain to someone that you are only kidding, it probably wasn't very funny in the first place and is better just left unsaid." And he just didn't get it. I mean, that just wasn't his, it's not something he understood. But people didn't like him. In fact, people really didn't like him. And so, If you're going to do that, it does come with that consequence. So, but the big thing is we don't want to shame or embarrass. You know, we certainly if somebody's working for you and they make a mistake, you know, if you correct them and yell at them in front of other people, you're shaming and embarrassing them, and not only does it not feel good to them, but it might make them even less effective because they're so worried about making a mistake and being chewed out and embarrassed that they're going to inflict more pressure on themselves and make more mistakes. Oh, what it's best to do is if you need to correct this person and do it tactfully, you do it in private, and you let them know certainly what they did and why it's not acceptable, and that you know they can do a lot better. But you don't shame them. You don't do it in front of others.
And this is such a golden rule, because even if you do. I would go even further, if you agree with me. Even if you expressing the polite, I would say competent criticism, but if it is done in front of other people, I still believe that this individual will be more confused rather than he will be open or she will be open for getting an information, getting some kind of a constructive criticism. So the point which you just made is absolutely critical. In one sense, as a basic rule, whatever is private should be private, and whatever is public should be public. So you have to make these judgments, and that judgment is based on the sense of respect and sense of understanding who you're dealing with. I like to relate this to one of your chapters. By the way, I wanted to comment on the format. This book, to all of our listeners, the book has collection of chapters, and it is incredibly well written in a compact, transparent form, which allows any person at any time to open just about any points or interest or concern. So it's becoming, I call the book, which is so helpful, going right before going into the stage. So I just wanted to comment on the side that the format, I don't know whether you been conscious of it or it was just a somewhat spontaneous decision, but it is extremely convenient and a convenient and a profound, helpful way not to have this shortcut mentality, which we unfortunately victim of today. So the shorter, the better. This is not the case. It is short, it's concise, it's helpful, and it's extremely beautifully timed to every possible occasion. I want to go into what you just explained, to 7 steps to overcome anger, which I even remember the page, believe it or not, page 46. Sorry. I like to ask you to walk us through of some of the points there, and considering that we're coming very close to the end of our program, and I wanted to ask a few graduated question, if I may. I like to ask you to talk about these 7 steps to overcome anger.
Well, you know, anger itself, if you really have an anger issue and you find yourself getting angry and blowing up at people, that's going to keep you from being as effective as you can be. It's going to keep you from being an ultimate influencer, certainly. So the first thing is to simply become aware that you do have that anger problem, and that's something that I had for a long time, which I eventually realized I had to defeat that. So the first is just to become aware. Second is to have the desire. In other words, do you have to truly desire to lose anger as a character trait? If you don't have the desire to change, you're not going to change. There's nothing you can do about it if you don't have the desire to. Three is to imagine, and that is picture situations and scenarios that could happen, because they probably have, that would elicit your anger, and simply see yourself handling them calmly, constructively, positively. This would be, I use the analogy of an astronaut who, before they go up into space, they do simulated missions, hundreds of them, so that by the time that any situation occurs up in space, they've already been through it so many times during simulation that it's as though they've already, you know, been there and they have experience. Fourth is to sort of play a mind game with yourself. Pretend that you're about to have an outburst of anger, and then imagine that a 7-foot-tall, 450-pound mean-looking guy who has a machine gun enters the room and says, you know, if you don't stop being angry right now, you're in trouble. And, you know, would you be able to calm down with that? And I'm thinking, I sure would. And so and the fact is you could. So now the next step is to recognize, and that is recognize that if you could do it then you've just proved to yourself that if the motivation is there, you're capable of not becoming angry. You just need to be motivated enough. So if you can do it, you know, once, you can do it whenever you choose. The sixth step is to apply, and that is, next time you find yourself in a situation where you can feel yourself getting angry, make sure to respond and not react, and become conscious. And remember that, you know, if that 450-pound ferocious-looking guy with a machine gun walked in, you could stop your anger and let that, you know, be an anchor to you, let that be a reminder to do so. And then seven, and this is so important, and that's building your small successes. You don't have to be 100% successful in order to take pleasure in your progress. Sometimes you're going to mess up. Sometimes you'll handle it well. Sometimes you'll handle it well and then slip up, and next time handle it well and what have you. So don't put pressure on yourself to be perfect. Just do your best. And again, it doesn't have to be 100%. You get there little by little.
I choose anger because it's one of the very predominant, I would say, family member of fear. They go together. And that's what we experience in our society today. And I wanted to thank you for making that one journey so helpful, so honest, with such high principles. And on this note, very unwillingly, but I need to finish to thank you, to congratulate you, and to wish you just the most of the satisfaction of life as a whole, from adversaries into allies. And I think we are almost graduating on the thought that we are able to make enemy as our friend because of the wisdom and power of thought of Bob Berg.
Oh, you're very kind.
It is a pleasure. I will say until soon. I would not say goodbye. And I hope that this book will be like a tremendously powerful human beam. And if one feels homeless as a businessman or a little bit homeless with some business solutions, go, I would say, run and get this fantastic book, Adversaries into Allies, which is written by great Bob Berg. I will thank my listeners, and I would finish on a musical note as usual. And I also like to share one thought, that in spite of difficulties and tension which we have today, we certainly have still our dreams, which we need to cherish. We have to try to take care of our health with information, which indeed these programs are bringing to you. And on this human note, with the successful journeys in your business, I will remind you to you that was Lina Mirmont, your friend, with Lina Life Show. Until next time, be well.